Who's number one?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. An annual survey just out ranks the top brands in the world. Coca-Cola was number one again in the Business Week interbrand ranking. It's followed by IBM, Microsoft, GE, all of them American names. But that's worldwide. If you go to China, it's European brands doing well. From Shanghai, Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
Financial brokerage CLSA ranked the top 100 brands in China. The highest-ranked multinational was Finland's Nokia at 4, way ahead of American competitor Motorola at 54. France's Carrefour leads Walmart in big box stores, and Germany's Adidas outranks Nike. Is there a built-in European edge? Retail consultant Paul French at Access Asia thinks European firms think more globally because they have to.
I think it's just been a historical accident of geography that European countries are small, and in order to expand, successful companies have to go abroad at a very early stage.
By contrast, American companies have a huge market at home to occupy their time. He's quick to say this is not a cultural story. It's not that European people are somehow more worldly and open-minded.
And Europeans, believe me, can be just as isolationist as Americans can, and quite spectacularly so.
CLSA's brand rankings in China are dominated by Chinese companies. Where they're seen as weak and foreign brands are more popular are consumer electronics, cosmetics, and fashion. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
The Securities and Exchange Commission wants more transparency for credit rating companies. Regulators proposed new rules yesterday. The credit rating industry was widely blamed for its role in the financial meltdown. The firms gave risky mortgage-backed securities their seal of approval. European markets are mostly down, with London's market up just a touch this morning. Asian markets lost about 1% today. Wall Street did a little profit-taking, with the Dow down just 8 points yesterday at 9,783. An oversupply of milk and a drop in international demand have sent prices paid to farmers to their lowest levels in 30 years. Farmers blame some of their problems on a lack of competition in the wholesale industry. And they've asked the U.S. Justice Department to investigate antitrust allegations. Tomorrow, the Senate Judiciary Committee will look at the complaints with a hearing in Vermont. From Vermont Public Radio, John Dillon reports.
Over the last year, dairy farmers' paychecks have shrunk nearly in half. They're paid about $11 for 100 pounds of milk. But Dave Montaigne said it costs him about $18 in feed, fuel, and labor to produce that much. The Vermont farmer figures he's losing at least $100 a month on each of his 1,000 cows.
Our size farmer, it'll be minus $1 million for the year.
Many farmers and their allies in Washington blame the low prices on a lack of competition among milk buyers. There are just a handful of dominant milk companies in the country buying milk from tens of thousands of farms. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders has asked the Justice Department to investigate Dean Foods, the nation's largest milk company. Sanders says the Dallas-based company controls 70% of the milk market in New England.
So while farmers' prices are at a 30-year low, Dean Foods is seeing a huge increase in their profits, and we think those two issues are not unrelated.
Dean Foods says the federal government, through price supports, has a big role in what farmers are paid. And the company says the simple law of supply and demand is what's behind the plummeting milk prices right now. In Montpelier, Vermont, I'm John Dillon for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build strong customer relationships with email marketing and online surveys. ConstantContact.com. And by CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 750,000 tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
We've been looking at the various stakeholders in the healthcare debate this week. While most large companies offer some health coverage, fewer than half of small business owners insure their workers. Small businesses typically pay 20% more in premiums than big companies. And if one worker is sick or old, that can raise the price of insurance for everyone. Here's the story of a small business owner who's been trying to balance her business and her employees' benefits for 20 years.
My name is Christina Runciman. I live in Kingsport, Tennessee. My business name is Life Force Glass Incorporated. We're giftware manufacturers. We imprint inspirational messages on glass stones, river rocks, glass hearts. At one point, I had 22 employees. Eventually, we got to where we're only 7 people. Now we're in the ridiculous situation that we insure the management group, and there's only one other person, and I can't insure her. It makes me feel awful. It makes me feel morally ambiguous. She's a young woman with several pre-existing conditions, plus a family with health issues. And if I insured her or attempted to, no one in my group, including myself, would have insurance. If we could join a larger group in an association and the pool was bigger, I'm sure there'd be no problem. There would be so many more people that healthy people would average out with the not so healthy people. But we don't have anything like that available to us. And for a group of one family and 3 individuals, we don't have a lot of buying power. And how did it ever start that employers are responsible for individuals' health care? When I go to trade shows and I talk to other manufacturers, most of them just don't even deal with it. They don't insure themselves. They don't insure their employees.
That was Christina Runciman. She owns Life Force Glass, a gift manufacturer in Kingsport, Tennessee. This segment of our series, The Cure, was produced by Mitchell Hartman. And finally, tickets go on sale today for Stash Bash, the annual festival devoted to the mustache. This year's musical guest is John Oates, as in Hall & Oates. John was rocking a tremendous lip sweater in the 1980s. He's currently starring in an online animated series called J-Stash that's all about his reunion with his facial hair.
You need me, John Oates.
Yeah, and you need me, J-Stash.
Stash Bash 09 happens next month. Organizers say if you don't have a mustache, they will supply you with one at the door. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great Friday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.